This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 471. We are the Fight Disciples, and this one's dedicated to the world of boxing. If it's the first time you've ever come across us, you can get us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for, and fightdisciples.com is our website. Please head there for all Android feeds, social media feeds, and a little bit of a link to our shop. We fully understand that you are frustrated at the moment because you're trying to order beer and you can't get your hands on it. Funnily enough, I've got a story about beer coming up on the UFC podcast, so make sure you come and join us for that. But don't worry, Mr. Pete has been speaking to the Champ Champs Brewery, and we are back in mod, I believe, aren't we? The elves have got the yeast out. We're actually making a new batch, if I'm not mistaken, a new drink. Is this right?
Correct, Amundo. I think we'll give full details on the UFC show, but yes, the gift that you received at the weekend of Proper Tackle could well be the very last case of Proper Tackle on planet Earth. More on that on the UFC show.
I'd like to point out I didn't get the Stipe Miocic glove, so it is out there somewhere, all right? So again, we'll talk about that a little bit more on the UFC show, but do bear with us. We are making a new drink, so therefore, if you are ordering stuff, you will get something in the not-too-distant future. Our social media feeds, by the way, are at Fight Disciples right across the board. Apart from Instagram, it's at The Fight Disciples. Now, normally, if you've been with us for, 4 or 5 years now, you'll know that we start the show off with a little bit of a ditty and a little bit of a chat about general stuff, which isn't necessarily fight sports related. And we can go off on piste, you know, knocking one out in a bush on a golf course, something like that. You know what I mean? All those types of things can come right now, literally. But we're going to save that. We're going to save that for our UFC show. Because there's just far too much boxing to get excited about from the weekend and, of course, what's coming up this weekend as well. It was amazing. Do you know something? I spent the whole of 2020 mourning my ass off. Absolutely. The back end, I think the back end, there was a little bit more positivity coming people's way from November, December onwards. But up to that point, I must have been a nightmare. And I'm apologising now, right? I apologise to all the boxing fans that have been with us for 4 or 5 years. That I had to put up with 6 months of misery guts of me last year, right? Because all I was doing was moaning about matchups. Every now and again, you get this, you get that. But look at the UFC. Yeah, I must have been that annoying prick at a party, right? I apologise. Saturday night, right, is how good boxing can be. When them matchmakers get their shit together, yeah? When the fighters take risks, when managers stop thinking about themselves, we get the best of the best. It was amazing. For the first time in a long time, no football can beat boxing at the weekend. No Definitely UFC not. Can beat boxing at the weekend. Tom Aspinall, I apologise. It can't. It can't beat what I saw at the weekend, mate. Boxing, fight after fight after fight after fight was absolutely mustard. I sit here today. I ain't going to moan about a referee. In fact, I'm going to praise a referee at some point in this show. I'm going to praise corner work. I'm going to praise judging. I'm also going to slag a little bit of judging off in the Adrian Broner fight, but that's coming later on. But I tell you something, mate. We got it, didn't we? We got it, baby. Boxing's back. Don't go backwards now. Eddie, Frank, Bob, Oscar De La Hoya. Don't go backwards now. Keep it like this. This is how we want it week in, week out. Beautiful stuff.
It's all about the matchmaking, isn't it? It's literally all about the matchmaking. And, you know, we need to see good competitive fights. And never mind what happened in the US or anywhere else for that matter, because, you know, obviously we're going to heap praise all over some of these big fight cards, but even Lee and then the team there up on Friday night in Bolton, that was a cracking card, you know, two massive upsets in the big fights. Like, that's what you want, proper 50-50 fights. But the Matchroom card on Saturday night, I've got to be honest, heading into it last week, we were super excited about it. There was four fights on there. There's a 5-fight card, and there was four on there that we were like, this is going to be fun. You know, listen, a big heavyweight making his pro debut as well. Why not? Let's throw that in there as well.
Absolutely.
A 5-fight card and everything about it smelt like gold. Did I realise that come midnight I'd be wanting to cup Eddie's balls and gently stroke his shaft? No, I didn't. I didn't see that one coming at all. But I wanted to, because I was just... It's been a long time since I've watched a British fight card in its entirety, got to the end of it and gone, fuck me. I'd have paid money to be at that event.
Yeah.
Top to bottom, I'd have paid money to be in Wembley Arena on Saturday night. Every single bit of it was absolutely fascinating. Congratulations to Eddie. Congratulations to everyone involved. The matchmaker especially. Pat yourself on the back. absolutely smashed it out of the park. Brilliant night boxing. And then we got to go to the US for the sugar on top as well. Tremendous.
Before we talk about fighters, I'm going to praise referees. I'm going to praise some corner work. I'm going to praise a little bit of judging. Yeah?
Just to let everyone know, in case you're checking your phone now, this is the Fight Disciples podcast. We have not been... People are going, who the fuck are these two? This is not Adam and Nick. What the fuck is going on? Mate, it is what it is. We call it like it is. And I agree with you, man. Some of the work that I've seen at the weekend, not just by the fighters, but by the officials, by the corners, I agree with you, man. Let's get stuck in.
Ian John Lewis, you've taken a whack on this show over the years, mate. You have taken a hammering at times. I thought your refereeing in the big Fisher fight was fantastic. So many may have sent that sent Gordon out for another beat down. That was bang on. That's exactly what I want to see from a referee. I want to see him keep the fighters safe. There's no way that Gordon's coming back out there and there's any benefit for him to continue in that fight. He's done after that short period of time. And yeah, it's a kid's debut and maybe fans want to see a little bit more and Eddie wants to see a little bit more and the young lad wants to see a little bit more. But at what risk? There's no point in risking somebody's health and safety. Ian John Lewis, give yourself a pat on the back. You were absolutely mustard, mate. And that's the standard. That's what I want to see every week. Doesn't matter how quick the fight goes. I'm not interested in that. Brilliant work, Ian John Lewis. Give yourself a pat on the back, son.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Excellent. And then, you know, we coast then straight into, let's go in order of the fight, shall we? Let's straight into the Jordan Gill performance against Cesar Suarez. You know, very dangerous Mexican. You know, the commentary was just completely, it was like verbal diarrhea, the amount of times they were talking about Lara.
What have I told you about?
The amount of times they were talking about Lara. Oh, Lara, Lara, no, Lara, Lara, last week, Lara, 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 right. Mexicans, hey. Lara. I was like, all right, guys, I get it. Silla Black, calm down, son.
Lara, Lara. Positivity only. Gets in there. Positivity only on here. Come on, positivity. Okay.
Jordan Gill gets in there, and for me, sets the tone then for the rest of the night, not just on this card, but over in the US, even in the UFC, sets the tone for my night's fight sports entertainment.
Expectations, yeah.
An absolutely wonderful performance against a very determined and very game Mexican. I thought Jordan Gill boxed his socks off. Punch and move, baby. That's what it's all about. So it was brilliant.
Well, there was moments in there as well that there were adversity. And this is what I meant about the matchmaking. Jordan could... Anybody else, you sit there and you have, what, 10 rounds of him coasting around and it's very, very similar every single round. Suarez came, man. He was game as fuck. Obviously, a former world title challenger at Super Bantamweight. He came and he was throwing the kitchen sink. He kept Jordan honest throughout the whole 10 rounds. And yes, Jordan won comfortably. There's no doubt about that on the cards. But he kept him honest and he kept him working. He kept him thinking. And Jordan couldn't switch off. And that was the beautiful thing about it, man. The kitchen sink was coming. And some of the pivots off that front foot and getting out the side, they are artistry, mate. It was beautiful to watch. That is the level of matchmaking that I'm talking about when you're bringing fighters through. Don't give them a tin can that they're not going to learn off. Give them somebody that's going to really push them. You know what I mean? And you might even get a defeat in there like we saw in the Robbie Davis Jr. fight. But, you know, push them. Push them to their limits. Brilliant matchmaking. And well done, Jordan. You're right. He was absolutely mustard.
If this is what Eddie linking up with Canelo and the way Matchroom is solidifying the relationship with, you know, the biggest star in Mexican boxing and obviously a red-hot stable, a Reynoso stable, if this means that we're getting more gay Mexicans coming over rather than Eastern European bin men, then fuck me, sign me the fuck up. And again, let's roll straight into it then. The Robbie Davis performance. Now, I text you, didn't I? I text you privately just as they were starting the ring walks. And I was like, I've got a feeling this Valenzuela is going to be like the next fucking Sugar Ray Leonard, Muhammad Ali. No one's ever
seen Marco Antonio Barrera, you referred
to. The new Barrera, I think I said he was. I said, I've got a feeling this fucker's going to be the new Barrera. And you know what? For the first three rounds, I was like, oh, shit. I seen this coming. But good, you know, all credit in the world to Robbie Davis coming back for me in the middle rounds, took the fight really close. I think after seven, I had Robbie Davis one up. And then, you know, all credit in the world to Valenzuela. Eight, 9, and 10, I think he went back up the gears again and wins the last three rounds, which for me, done him enough to win it on the scorecards. But again, a wonderful fight. For me, does okay, there's it means that Robbie Davis is still a work in progress, and it means that he's got to go back and sit down with Dom, because there was some unusual conversations going on in that corner.
Yeah.
You know, a boxer and a trainer, not even debating tactics, but, you know, Robbie wanting to go back to orthodox and Dom basically saying shut up in his face and making him stay southpaw. Listen, I've got my own personal opinion on it. I thought Robbie was right at the time. I'm like, yeah, same. Man, you're getting tagged badly. Go back to orthodox. But then I also seen a lot of people online, you know, debating it and everything else. People who are respecting the industry were saying, well, no, this is the reason why. I personally, I stand by it. I think he should have gone back to orthodox. But
the
again,
the reason for it, I had
Valenzuela winning by maybe 1-2 rounds. So, you know, at the end of the day, had he stuck to the tactics, I don't know. Listen, I think Robbie Davis and Dom, and they're not the only two that we're going to talk about that need to go away and have a serious conversation about their future together. But I think that was a crack in the plaster there, and they need to have a real honest discussion with each other.
Yeah.
Because Dom needs to explain to Robbie why he insisted he stay southpaw, and Robbie needs to understand that in the middle of a fight, you either trust what you're being given or you feed back the info. That was what was unusual. When Dom said, shut up, I didn't hear what they said in the previous rounds, but he never let Robbie explain why he wanted to go back to orthodox. I can't see it coming. My eyes, you know, whatever it may be. And that's what made it uncomfortable. But again, I think it's wrong to judge their relationship and what happened in that corner from those, like that 20-second shot of what we heard. Because I don't know what conversations went on in the previous rounds.
Yeah, or what the tactics were going into that fight. And my take on it is that it wasn't working. Southpaw was not working, because that right down the pipe was hitting him every single time. And the reason for it, in my opinion, Robbie Davis isn't a southpaw. He's a switch hitter. He's a switch hitting orthodox fighter. That's what he is. Yes, he can box in a southpaw stance, but he's not a southpaw fighter. So therefore, when he's throwing shots a lot of the times, he ends up square in his stance. Which is obviously anybody who knows anything about boxing knows full well that that's a bigger target to hit. And that's what was happening. So go back to what you naturally know in order to become less of a target. That's all I was saying on social media with it. It did seem extremely weird as to why Dom was adamant. I've seen things about his guard and where his hand position was, and that is why he stayed in that southpaw position. I've seen loads of different things on it. And like you've just said, this is for them now. Robbie's got to understand why Dom did that. He's got to be on board with it, or he's not going to be on board with it. It's his career. He's got to make that decision. Listen, and hopefully they'll be able to move forward and come out better the other side. Sometimes things like this are good things. Sometimes things like this are absolutely disastrous things for relationships between fighters and trainers. And who knows how that's going to play out. But it didn't work. Valenzuela was absolutely on the money. Got the job done. I think I scored it 95-93. There was all sorts going in there. There were knockdowns, points off, and all sorts of bits and bats, weren't there? Brilliant fight, mate. I was, again, captivating. Yeah. That's what I want. I don't want Davis Jr. to have a knockover. I don't want him to just course through some rounds and us all, you know, go to make a cup of tea after round 7 because you know how this is going to be playing out. I want jeopardy. I want it to be in there where I'm thinking, I can't turn this off. This is fucking mega, man. He needs to knock him out and all this type of stuff. That's what I want to see again. Matchmaking, tick, tick, tick. Whoever's in matchmaking, making these fights, they deserve a bonus. Eddie, I know you listen because you nick half of our stuff and use it on your own bloody social channel, son, right? So here, there you go. Whoever's in charge of that matchmaking, stick an extra tenner in the wage packet this month, mate. They've earned it. Super stuff. Superb stuff.
Loved it. I completely agree with you. I loved every minute of that fight. And I've known Robbie since he was a boy. And, you know, it was difficult to see. And certainly the last three rounds when I had it super close, I had Robbie up after 7, I think it was. And then all credit, I think, as you say, Valenzuela came on strong and just tagged Robbie. And the big shots he tagged Robbie with were real eye-catching shots and was straightening the legs. But listen, again, I completely agree with you. There's no loser in a fight like that, because fans are just like, Christ, I want to see. That's what I want to see. That's the level I want to see. Yeah. If that means Robbie Davis has to go, you know, and take another sideways step to get towards a world title, then great. No, at the end of the day, he's not a baby. And he's trying to maneuver himself in a position to fight for a world title. If you can't win fights like this, then you shouldn't get a world title shot. Correct, so all you can do is keep competing against this level of opponents and try and improve next time. It was his first fight with Dom. There was always going to be some teething issues, because it's all good and well they've had over a year together in the gym. But being in the gym and actually being in a firefight are two completely different things. And I think, as you say, I think this will be the making or the breaking of that partnership. Either they'll sit down and go, you know what? We don't quite work together in the corner when the shit hits the fan. That's evidence. I don't trust you or you don't trust me, whatever it may be. Or they go, right, we've been together in a firefight. Things went completely wrong, but there's stuff we can address. And this is how we move forward as a team. And now I've got this and you've got that. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean the end. It could be the making of them. It really could. But just surprises me that it just felt like weird tactics because, as you say, Robbie Davis is a natural switch hitter. And that gym, look at the history of that gym and the fighters that gym has made. Fucking more switch hitters than this country's ever seen. That is the switch hitting gym. So weird that he goes to the switch hitting gym that's going to absolutely suit his style, you think, and then gets told to only fight as a southpaw. Unusual, but hey, hey ho, interesting.
Now, I'm not along with a lot of social media that I saw on Saturday night about Florian Marku. The Marku-Charlton fight played out exactly how I imagined it to play out. The reason being is that Ryland Charlton is a 140-pound fighter and Florian Marku is a 147-pound fighter. Charlton made the fight because obviously it's a tasty fight. I'm sure he's getting paid a few quid. You saw him weigh in quite light. He's not a welterweight, the kid, right? So I kind of anticipated that Marku would have his wicked way with him based purely on size. He isn't going to get hurt at any point. But he did get hurt. Charlton caught him. Charlton clipped him and he put him down because I don't know whether he took his eye off the ball or whether he thought he was being a bit nonchalant or whatever it may be, but it did happen. Now, I want to see, before I get on the train with Florian Marku, because he does a lot of things right. He's got a great personality. He looks good at times. Some of the work that he does is good. You can well tell that he's come from an MMA background and a kickboxing background just with the way that he sets his shots up and everything. I'm in on that. I'm in on everything that he's doing. I kind of like him being a cheeky fucker in the ring, talking to his opponents. Love all that. I'm in on board. But he was fighting a smaller dude. It's easy to fight smaller dudes and use your size and bully him around the ring and end up and just overpower him with size, right? And some nice stuff in there, but mainly size. I want to see him fight a proper blown up welterweight, a proper guy. You know what I mean? Before I commit and go, all right, I'm on board with the Florian Marku train. Because it's right now, it's tempting. It's leaving the station. It looks good, man. It's nice. I'm in. But I want to buy a ticket. But I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I think obviously the obvious one was the one he was calling for, and that'd be Conor Benn, obviously, to step back.
Conor's miles ahead.
You would say, but
Conor's miles ahead of him.
But still, you know, I thought that kind of performance, you know, it says a lot that you watch a card like this. And yes, we were all excited about Marku Charlton because it was a good trade fight.
Yeah.
Everyone knows both these guys are game. And a lot of people were 50-50 split. I'm like you. I always fancied Marku just with him being the bigger guy. And as soon as the fight started, you could see why. You know, he knew he was bigger. He knew he was stronger. And he gave Charlton little respect. He was quite comfortably backing up against the ropes and just covering up, chatting to Charlton, letting him unload. But it was nice. Listen, I think the left hook in the sixth round, which dropped Marku, for me, it was, you know, it was a knock. Yes, listen, the shot drew the knockdown. But when you watch it back, Marku rolls his ankle. His ankle rolls. And that's why he went down, because his ankle went. But it was on the back of a shot. So a legit knockdown. But he wasn't in any trouble at any stage. And then obviously he turned it on a round or two later and got the finish. I think he looks good, man. And I like everything you've just said, I agree with. I like he's attractive on TV. He's made a huge step forward in his career on a good card like that on Sky. And everyone who's watched it's gone, okay, I'm in. What's next? And that's the most important thing now.
Yes.
Is how do Matchroom match him next? You know, who do they get him out with next in this welterweight division to get him matched up, to get him another fight that people can go, okay, yeah, this is the guy. I remember this guy now. I remember seeing this guy before. And that's a difficult thing because he's running through these ticket sellers, as Eddie kept reminding us, in the build-up to the fight. And it's going to get to the point where people are like, fuck that. I don't want to fight him. I don't want to fight him. He's confident. He's got a punch. And he's going to make a fool of me, just like he did with Charlton. So, again, as brilliant as he was, the matchmaker at the weekend, a little bit of pressure on him to get a good matchup. A Congo or someone like that, you know, a Luther Clay,
yes,
Chris Congo.
Yes.
You know, is that what we're saying next?
That's what I'm saying, man. That's where I'm at. Give him a Congo and let's see what happens. A proper welterweight. That's what I want to see. Just a note on before we move on from this fight. Brilliant corner work. Brilliant. You knew that he's gone. He's gone. There's no point in it. He's tough as old boots. He's standing there. He ain't going to go down. Just his pride is going to not let him allow that to happen, right? Or he's not going to pack it in himself. Brilliant corner work. Well done. Look after your fighter. You've given your fighter now a little bit of something to hang on to. I'd have carried on. I might have clipped him or whatever it may be. Ryland Charlton's corner. Well done, team. Superb stuff. Brilliant. Now then, mate. Main event, yeah? Main event.
Go on, I'm ready. Let me just take my flaccid cock out so you can give it a little rub. Go on, I'm ready.
Just because you're like,
congratulations are in order. Come on.
Listen, I'm not getting on that. I'm not getting on that yet. What I want to say is this, yeah? And this is to everybody that I've seen on social media post-fight, because pre-fight, the energy was good, man. Oh, look at this. What a fight. Avanesi and Kelly, we've been waiting for 2 years for this little bad boy. Brilliant step up for Kelly. Is he the real deal? Is he all that? Is he at this level? Post-fight? Oh, my God. Obviously, he was well out of his depth. It was far too early for him. He's only had this amount of fights. He's only 26 years of age. Match him, throwing him in with a lion. But listen, keep your 1990s views to yourself, right? Because it's those views that are absolutely ruining boxing. All this, well, you've got to be slow. You've got to take your time. You've got to give him this. You've got to give him that. This kid is an Olympian. He's from Team GB. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. Put him in and give him proper tests. Not only does he benefit, he'll learn more from Saturday night than 10 tin cans, right? And just because it's a loss, that doesn't mean anything. Get this Floyd Mayweather mentality out of everybody's heads. You don't need to protect us. Get him in there. If it pays off, brilliant. If it doesn't pay off, commend the kid for having the bollocks for stepping up, which I most certainly do. Well done, Josh Kelly. It didn't go your way. That's not the end of the career, though, mate. You're only 26 years of age. Hopefully, there's a massive learn there. You go away and you think, do you know something? Yeah, this, that, and the other. I could have done this a bit better. I need to maybe sharpen up, because first couple of rounds, Josh Kelly looks mint. And then all of a sudden, he might take his eye off the ball. He might get a little bit, you know, cocky or whatever it may be. And Avanesian's like, I said on social media, he's like a shit that won't flush, man. He ain't going anywhere. And he chinned him, absolutely nailed it and put it on him, didn't he? And really put him in to the deep waters. Now, I don't want to see people saying that that was too early for Josh Kelly. It wasn't. It was absolutely bang on. He got out of it what he wanted, I think, hopefully. David Avanesian got out of it what he wanted. The matchmaker got out of it what he wanted. And we as fans most certainly got out of it what we wanted. Now, I don't want to see people going backwards now, matching their young prospects up with tin cans, because that's where boxing was going down this dirty, horrible rabbit hole. More of Saturday night. Keep them 1990s views to yourself, kids, all right? Let's keep... And praise... Get on Josh Kelly's social media now. He's got beat. Get on his social media and praise him. Send him a message saying, listen, man, fucking fair play to you. You got in with a killer, a lad that's been at world level. All right, didn't work out this time, but I'm a fan. I'll be back. Whenever you're back, I'm back. I'm with you. I'm on board. I'm on board with your mentality. Top stuff, Josh. Well done, mate.
Yeah. Listen, it was the right fight in terms of his development, but it still felt like the wrong time.
Oh, right? Get back to the 1990s, man.
No, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the fact that it was the right fight for Josh Kelly. It was the wrong time because David Avanesian's too strong a champion. I said that through the entire build-up. I said that on last week's podcast. David Avanesian, for me, was always going to be all wrong for Josh Kelly.
Yeah.
European title fight, age 26, when you've been to the Olympics, when everyone's high on you, when you've, you know, you haven't got a loss on your record, probably should have, but you haven't got a loss on your record. You need to move up because the thing with Josh Kelly is, and again, to repeat myself, but I said it last week, and I said it to everyone I was speaking to, that we're all high on Josh Kelly because of the flashes of things that we've seen in the 11 fights so far. There's flashes, there's moments, there's rounds, and we've seen it again here. At least three, maybe even the first four rounds.
Yeah.
You're watching that, and you're like, well, three rounds before his petrol tank ran out. You're watching that, and you're going, this is the guy that could become a world champion.
There you go.
Fast hands, low. Bump, bump, loads of movement from the hips, loads of feints, big shots, moves away really well. They're the flashes, and you go, yeah, man, I'm in. That's what I like. But what we've also seen in the previous 11 fights, especially the last three or four, is Josh Kelly tiring, Josh Kelly being left wide open, Josh Kelly missing wildly and not defending himself, Josh Kelly falling into being squared on positions, therefore being an easier target. This is everything I talked about last week.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've not seen anything. But everyone got convinced, and I spoke to a few people about it who are love and respect, one a former world champion boxer that I love and respect, and they were adamant telling me Josh Kelly will knock him out in the first five rounds. I'm telling you. And I was like,
that was never
happening. Where are you getting that from? Yeah. Where are you getting that from? Where are you seeing that? What have I missed? What have you seen that I've missed? And you know what it kept coming back to? It kept coming back to the same thing. Oh, this, I've seen this, I've seen that. Adam Booth said this, and that's what it kept coming back to.
There you go.
And I was like, everyone is building Josh Kelly up to be, to like he's going to smash Evan Essie into bits. Then we're after a world title. And when you got down to the bread and bollocks of it, it was because everyone believed what Adam Booth was saying. Now listen, fucking Adam Booth's an absolute expert, man. He's been there, done it, wore the t-shirts. I've got nothing but admiration and respect for Adam Booth as a boxing man and a boxing coach. But believing what Adam Booth sees in the gym over what you see in the ring is a crazy thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Because listen, we've all been there. I could reel off 24 boxers who I've seen in the gym and gone, fuck me, he's going to be a world champion. And then get in the ring and it doesn't work. Either they fall apart because of the too much energy burned up or whatever it may be. We all know gym fighters, and everybody in fight sports forevermore will always go, what a fantastic gym fighter he was. Shame he couldn't do it under the bright lights. I think Josh Kelly's going down this road. He's a gym fighter. And until I see anything different, I always say he must be sensational in the gym because Adam Booth's an incredible judge of character. But when he gets in the ring, whether it's too much nervous energy, whatever it may be, this guy's a 3-4 round fighter at best. And we've seen that clearly as day on Saturday night.
Yeah, and you were right, man. You were right. Listen, all the way through this, both of us were of the same thought process. But last week, again, you get sucked in, don't you, to the promotional of stuff. And I'm watching him on the pads. And all right, the pads don't hit back. But I'm watching him working out and I'm thinking, look at this kid. He's fast as fuck. He looks in great nick. That was the thing that did it for me. I looked at him in nick and I thought, right, he sorted the conditioning thing out. Because that was my only question about Josh Kelly. I thought he was conditioning and he switches off. And he's got away with it. And I thought that he would have looked, for example, when he went over to the States, he got beat, right? He got beat. But he got away with the decision. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, he must know that he got away with that. He's learned from that. He can't switch off now. He knows he's stepping up. He's taking on Devin Avanesian, for crying out loud. I think he's going to be switched on. He's sorted his conditioning out. He will get a points decision. There was never, ever in my head, anyway, that he was knocking David Avanesian out. Anybody that said that is a lunatic. Anyway, it was like you've nailed it. You've nailed it. First three rounds, I'm thinking, yes, here we go, baby. He's here. And then it was like playing Street Fighter. And you've just absolutely blasted the shit out of it on Street Fighter. And then you see your energy bar going, no. What are you doing? Where's the energy bar going? I'm smashing this guy. Rao's getting his ass kicked. No, don't go. I can't finish him. And then that was it. And it was like as well, I was on the radio at the same time, so I didn't see originally where the cut came from. Because I saw this blood pissing out the back of his head. I'm thinking, what the fuck's that? How's that happened? Elbow, back, headbutt? Because it's definitely not a punch to make a cut there. So I'm looking at that. And it was like, from that moment, and I don't know whether you saw this yourself, it was like adversity came, and then all of a sudden, whether it's an adrenaline dump, a panic, I don't think he's ever been there before in the professional game with claret everywhere and what have you. It was like all those things just got on top of him and he stopped doing the things that he was doing. He stopped thinking. He stopped getting out of the way, mate. That's what he stopped doing. And Avanesian didn't change. Avanesian didn't change his tactics. He did the same thing from the start to the end of the fight. It's just that Josh Kelly stopped doing what he was doing and Avanesian took over.
When I spoke to Team Avanesian last week, Neil Marsh and the whole team, they literally spelled out and they reiterated it all week. This is how we beat Josh Kelly. We'll walk him down. We'll lose rounds. And once he gasses, we'll smash him to bits. That's what we're going to do. Yeah. There was no hiding the tactics. They knew what they were going to do from the get-go. You know, and there was a lot of talk about Josh Kelly being in incredible shape. Mate, I seen the photographs as well. I seen him hitting pads and was like, oh, baby, he looks awesome.
Yeah.
But he was also about 165 pounds. So I knew 20 pounds that I had to come off. And there was no 20 pounds of belly fat. That was 20 pounds of muscle. That shit's not easy to do. So you knew he was going to have a monster weight cut this week. You knew he was going to have to get rid of a lot of weight. And when you're someone like Josh Kelly, who's a switch hitter, low hands, throwing wild punches everywhere, it's all about your reflexes.
Yeah.
Losing that much weight, that's like complete counterbalance against the style of fighter you are. You can't be that style of fighter and drain yourself, because you're as you said, your energy bar needs to be high to be able to do what you're going to do. Likewise, David Avanesyan, what he does is he gets his head on your chest and he makes you work in exactly the same way that Cesar Juarez did it against Jordan Gill. And that's, I'm not trying to pour slight on Avanesyan here, far from it. What I'm saying was two very similar
style.
Fighters.
Yeah, style, yeah.
But what you had was Jordan Gill was fit enough and skillful enough to be able to do what he needed to do to outbox Juarez on the back foot and to win rounds and to use his footwork to get out of the way. Josh Kelly couldn't do that because there was nothing left in the tank after three rounds. And now, whatever you read this week, I've already seen one headline saying the loss of blood to Josh Kelly affected him. That's absolute bollocks. That is absolute, complete and utter shite. That is not true whatsoever.
Where's that?
I've seen much... Yeah, mate, it's around. I don't bring any negativity to it, but believe me, it's around already. Do not let that take anything away from what Dave and Avanesyan did. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. He let Josh Kelly get ahead of steam, was quite happy to lose the three or four rounds as long as he made Josh Kelly work. And after three or four rounds, when Josh Kelly's gas tank emptied, Dave and Avanesyan did what he said he was going to do, stepped in, smashed them to bits. I text you before the first bell and said, Adam Booth will throw in the towel.
Yeah.
I knew it. I just knew it. And you know why? Because fate is a bitch. And last week, when we watched Josh Warrington, Adam Booth was on TV saying, if that was my fighter, I'd have pulled him out. And as soon as he said that, I thought, those words are going to come back to haunt you if you don't pull Josh Kelly out. And as soon as Josh Kelly... Listen, I think Adam Booth did a sensational job.
Right decision. Done. Right decision.
He was finished.
Yeah.
Get that towel in there, get him out, because you need to save him for another day. But what's clear is Josh Kelly's other day is fucking certainly not at welterweight. It's at very least junior middleweight. If not, a year off, move to middleweight, fill out, and see if you can take that speed with you up to when you're fully hydrated as a middleweight. But then you're going to get a different scenario is that... While he's got the speed, I don't know whether he's got the power to move up different weight divisions.
Let's talk about the positivity of Devin Avanesyan. Yeah, because obviously, like you just said, the high from Sky Sports, it's all Josh Kelly. Josh Kelly, right? This is what, because listen, pretty boy. He looks good, man. He looks good. He's the poster boy. He could do all the things, be the main man in JD Sports and all this type of stuff. There, of course, from a commercial point of view, you want Josh Kelly to do well. And I still do. I personally think this loss could be a godsend, an absolute godsend for him in his career, just to realign a few things. Because we're only talking small things, mate. He's got skills. He's got the talent. We're just talking a few things in order to get himself back on track. And fingers crossed he can do that. David Avanesyan.
Does he do it with Adam Booth?
I don't know. I don't know the answer
Adam
to that.
Booth. Adam, and I was correcting some people, and so this is not Eddie Hearn's fault. This is not Matchroom's fault. This is not the matchmaker's fault. Mate, it's a great, if you're a promoter and if you're Sky, if you're a broadcaster, and you
lips,
get approached,
man,
and say, do you want to do Avanesyan versus Kelly? 100%, that's a main event every day but Tuesday. But who pushed for the fight? Who asked for it in 2018? And who kept Josh Kelly in the frame when it fell apart in 2018, when he should have gone a different direction? Who Josh Kelly pursued it and got lobbied to get him ranked as the mandatory contender with the European title? It was all Adam Booth. Now, again, Adam's seeing something in the gym that we are not seeing in the ring. And maybe he thinks, I've got to push Josh forward, because when the shit hits the fan, when it's the spotlight's on, when the threat is there, against a fierce champion, that's when Josh will revert to type to what we get in the gym.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what Adam Boo's logic was.
Yeah.
But if I'm Josh Kelly, I'm going to go, why the fuck was I campaigning for 2 years to have that fight in this weight? There's a conversation they need to have, a serious conversation. Because just like we said about Robbie Davis Jr., this is Josh Kelly's career.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But on David Avanesyan, listen, man, that dude now, he's clocked European level, clocked it.
Yep.
We are now talking about getting him back to that world level. He's been there, done it. He's beaten the likes of Shane Mosley. Okay, it was at the back end of Shane's career, but I don't care. David Avanesyan, we're constantly talking this welterweight division that the top boys, the Spences and the Crawfords, don't seem to want to tangle with each other. PBC have got everybody in-house, haven't they? All doing this round-robin nonsense. If you need a fight, lads, there's a lad here. This crazy Russian's ready. He is, without any shadow of a doubt, a top fight for any of those top boys. He will not die wondering. He will come forward. He will give it to him. He will put it on him. And listen, he might get beat. He most likely will get beat because everybody knows what I think about Terence Crawford. He's one of the very, very best on the planet, right? But it'll be a bloody entertaining fight, mate. He'll give it him. He'll put it on the line. He needs to be back at world level. And if I don't know if he is under Eddie. I know that obviously Neil's his manager, but I don't know if Eddie's promoting him.
I think they've got one fight left, I think they said in the interview last week.
Has to be top level.
One fight left with Matchroom. And listen, Eddie can make it happen, man. Of course he can make it happen. He's certainly one of the biggest global promoters on the planet right now with some amazing TV deals. So he can absolutely make it happen. Obviously, the issue is that none of these guys are necessarily freed up because of the PBC or the top rank angle. None of these guys are blatantly obvious. It could well be another fight on UK soil. I think there's big fights out there. The obvious one would be Conor Benn, you know, who was being lined up to fight Josh Kelly anyway. I think that's a great fight. Is it right for Conor Benn right now? No. Do I give Conor Benn more of a chance than I give Josh Kelly? Yes, because the improvements Conor Benn's made recently have been sensational, and I really like Conor Benn. I don't think it's personally the right fight, but hey-ho, there you go. Listen, one name could be, because it doesn't look like the Khan fight's ever going to happen, but Kell Brook. If Kell Brook is serious about getting back in the mix, Kell Brook, Avanesyan, or for that matter, even Amir Khan, Avanesyan, I'm going to watch either of those fights. It's a great way back into the top 10 for Amir and Kell. It's a massive payday for David Avanesyan and would absolutely solidify him, you know, as a top contender just because of where Kell and Amir have been previously. So there's certainly good fights out there, big fights. The golden trio are still there as well. As you say, it seems impossible to match them against each other. They're all looking for opponents. And what you can guarantee with David Avanesyan is have gloves will travel, man. He'll go anywhere for his world title fight.
Would you match him with Virgil Ortiz?
Isn't Virgil Ortiz matched with Morisuka?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If he comes through that
the
fight.
Winner of that. I'd certainly match him with Adrian Broner from what I've seen at the weekend as well.
Well, he's a welterweight. Well, he is a welterweight now, isn't he, Adrian? Oh, man. In fact, we'll do that. We'll do Adrian first and we'll finish on the crazy Mexicans, man, because that was just outrageous. AB. Still AB, baby. Still AB. Jesus Christ. When the fight was made, I looked at Santiago having this undefeated record and the level of opponents that he'd come through. And I thought, right, given the fact that Adrian Broner, once upon a time, was world champion in four weight classes, and I don't know how he did it, all vacant titles, I think, weren't they? But he should, with his skills, do the business against Santiago. It's the perfect fight for him to go and look good. Go and look good, mate. And then as the weeks counted down towards the fight, and obviously we got into fight week, and then we saw the contracted weight move from 140 to 147. I just went, oh my God, here we go again. Adrian, mate, how many times, son? They weigh in, Adrian's doing Adrian things. And I thought to myself, right, come on. I don't know why I do this. I sit there and I go, come on, Adrian, do it, son. We want shit-talking Broner back. That's what I want. Come on, AB. Give it to me, baby. Give it to me. First round, I thought, fucking hell. I threw my proper tackle down. Threw it down and I went, still same old AB. Here we go. Low punch output. This is going to be ridiculous. And he's going to take a decision. I know he's taking a decision. I know he's going to win it, even though this kid's going to box his ears off now for 12 rounds. Anyway, funnily enough, I actually thought there was a change in momentum in the fight, because the first six rounds of the fight, I'm thinking, is Adrian going to throw anything? Is he going to do, or is he just out combing his hair? What's he doing? What the fuck is he doing? Gets to round 7-8-ish, yeah? Then all of a sudden he thought, do you know something? I might put this into second gear. He just went, you don't need second. You need sixth right now, Ed. Come on, son, let's get cracking. He did up it a bit. And there was moments in the second half of that fight where I'm thinking, that's it. Don't stop. Keep going. Do that again. Do that again. Same old AB. How he took a decision, those cards as wide as they were, this is where I'm going to slag some judges off. How he took that decision that wide, fucking hellfire, mate. No idea. I've no idea. I don't know what I was watching. Adrian Broner show. It's like it's just like comedy, isn't it? Just comedy now.
One of the judges, that Peter Harry, had it by six rounds.
Amazing. He didn't fight for six rounds. He didn't even fight for six of them. He didn't do anything for six of them.
Absolutely mental stuff. I'll be honest, I didn't even watch the full 12 rounds. It's Adrian Broner, man.
See, that's the thing. What it is. I thought that. I thought that so many people who we said, listen, Broner's back, make sure you watch it. If you watch the first four rounds of that fight, you've gone. You've got to have balls of fucking steel to have stayed through that. And I don't know why I did. Maybe I was eating Cocoa Pops for a couple of rounds and then I came back to it. I don't know. But I stayed with it and I ended up watching the back end of it. So I'm no surprise that anybody's gone after four rounds because it was boring as fuck.
Yeah, well, that whole card was boring, to be honest with you. I tried to watch the Robert Easter Jr. fight against Ryan Martin because I thought that was a good fight. Mm. That went to a one-sided points decision as well. Roshi Warren was on there going the distance as usual. And then obviously Otto Wallen in the main event outpointing Dominic Brazil. I feel even though it was only a five-fight card, I feel sorry for anybody that was in the Mohegan Sun Casino covering that fight, because we've all been there on nights like that where it all just goes to a points decision, but fuck me. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe the judges were just fucking bored by the time Barona got in there. And here's my scorecard. Take it now. Let me have a sleep.
Maybe they put it in. I'll do it now. There you go. Have that. See you in a bit. Ta-da.
I'm going to the bar. See you later.
It's going to be interesting to see what... Well, I say it's going to be interesting to see what Barona does now. Does anybody care? Does anybody
Nobody
care
cares,
now?
No.
I don't think they do they? Which is a shame, man. Because he's a character. Yeah, he's done a lot of fucking horrible shit. But, well, I don't even know what I'm... Nobody cares.
Let's move on to the what knockout we said of the year. Was going to be...
The knockout of the year?
Fight of the year, which actually turned into performance / knockout of the year, because Oscar Valdez, man, he was absolutely sensational from the get-go. Yeah. Absolutely sensational. And that was absolutely a clinic, and you can't heap enough praise on Reynoso's for coming up with that game plan. You had a smaller fighter moving up to fight a bigger fighter, not just a bigger fighter, but a destructive puncher in Miguel Berchelt. And what you're talking about was in the build-up, everyone's saying it's going to be a war, it's going to be a you know, Barrera-Morales-type fight, it's going to be incredible, all-Mexican affair. So you know there's a shitload of local pride involved in everything else. Now, what Berchelt's expecting is, yeah, this is all talk, man. There's no way Valdez is going to come at me. I'm too big a puncher. It's all talk. Let's have a boxing match, and then when it gets down and dirty, count me in. But what Valdez does is, first round, he comes out like lightning, on the front foot, takes control of the center of the ring, and starts bashing Berchelt up. So straight away, you can just see the color in Berchelt's face just getting redder and redder as he's getting more and more pissed, going, this kid's going to take it to me. So in the second round, Berchelt, for me, comes running out then like, right, that's it. Let's have it. I'm having the center of the ring. And Valdez suddenly goes, back foot. Come on then. Boom, boom. And just brings him onto that left hook all night. Valdez was absolutely sensational. And I tipped Berchelt. I said, Berchelt's going to be too big, big a puncher. Moving up in weight, he's never going to be able to do it. I think Berchelt will win on points, but it'll be a tough fight. Obviously, I was predicting a fight of the year. But Oscar Valdez, mate, if for any young fighter moving up through the weight divisions, taking on a puncher, that is exactly the tactics to do it. Piss the puncher off and then have him chase the fight and walk you down. And just pick him the fuck off. Valdez, oh, mate, What a performance.
And then knocking the fuck out. Knockout. What a knockout. Now, people have come at me.
It could have been stopped.
Yes, it could. It could.
Could have been stopped in four, to be honest with you. When he falls into referee Russell Mora at the end of the fourth round, Burchell's gone. His legs are all over the place. Yeah. And then literally on the bell, Valdez lands another right hand. I would have had no issue if Russell Mora had stopped the fight at that point, because Burchell's couldn't even stand up at the counter term when he beat the counts, and he waves them back in, and Valdez leaps forward right on the bell and lands a right hand, and Burchell falls into the ropes again. The ropes kept him up once more. I would have had no issue had it been stopped then. Obviously, the fight then goes on for another 5-6 rounds, but it was all Oscar Valdez. He was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he was, man. I mean, I was lucky enough to speak to him last week. It's available on our YouTube channel. Go and check it out, because he's a fascinating dude. Keeps alligators. He's mad as a box of frogs, is the fella. Speaks brilliant English. And he's just an all-round top guy. Just a top guy. And we were chatting quite a lot, because I remember the 2012 Olympics. And I remember him fighting an Indian kid at the 2012 Olympics, and me being sat there thinking, oh, this guy's all right. Who's this fella? So you do a bit of a Google search. You realize that he went to the 2008 Olympics. He's coming through. And then you start doing a bit of research that he's the hot thing in Mexico. Now, at the same time as him coming through, Burchell was coming through. They're very similar ages, these guys. But the reason why Burchell was never seen at these Olympic places is because Valdez took him. He was the hot guy. Valdez was the hot guy coming through. So all the chat, like you said, building up to this fight was about Burchell. Burchell's the best super feather on the planet. He hits like an absolute train. He's the main man, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of buy into that and you think, yeah, you're actually right. He's massive. Look at him. He's a huge dude. Oscar Valdez has been at featherweight. And don't get me wrong, he's performed at featherweight, former world champion there. So coming up, he might have his work cut out. So we spoke last week when we sat down about Olympic pedigree. And if you remember the Scott Quigg fight, the fascinating thing about that fight is that he breaks his jaw in the fourth or fifth round in that fight.
Yeah.
And then the tactics change, because Valdez has had this reputation with a lot of fight pundits that he's typical Mexican. Comes through, just walks forward and chucks bombs, and he's just Aztec blood, right? That's basically where people are pigeonholed him. But if you look at the second half of that Quigg fight, when he's broken his jaw and he's in a bit of trouble and there's blood pissing out of his mouth, he goes on the back foot. And he boxes the living daylights out of Scott Quigg. We all remember Scott Quigg's face. He was smashed to bits, man. He looked like a bloody Klingon. He smashed him to absolute smithereens and a wide points decision, but he did it on the back foot. So we brought it up. We had a little bit of a chat about it, and he smiled at that point, and I thought, this fucker's a clever guy, man. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's got himself involved in. But like you've just said, that first round, I was gobsmacked. Because I thought he'd be a bit cagey, he'd be a bit tentative, he'd try to do him a little bit later on. He went out there like a bull in a china shop, and then he just pissed it. Burchell couldn't get hold of him. It was mad how good Valdez was. He was absolutely elite. And if he's not in, and I know this, you're going to think I'm going OTT here, if he's not in your pound-for-pound conversation, at least, in the top 10, then what are you watching? Because that was, Miguel Burchell's legit. Proper legit, and he absolutely battered the living daylights out of him. Unbelievable from Valdez.
Yeah, that the knockout as well, just absolutely chilling. Right on the bell in that 10th round.
You won't see a better one this year, mate.
Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful stuff. You know, when he dropped him three times, twice with the left hook, once with the right hand. You're right, man. I think Burchell's got into that fight thinking, there's no way this kid can bully me. There's no way he's going to push me back. There's no way. And he's gone in, and that first round is completely through him. Not only is Valdez on the front foot, but he's too fast, and he's hurting Burchell, hurting him. And regardless of what conversation went on in that corner, you visibly see Burchell come up in the second round as if to go, that's fucking not happening. Bite down my gum shield. Let's have it. I'm coming forward. And Valdez is like, right on cue, son. Right on cue.
How much?
You're now fighting my fight. This is what I wanted. I want you to be chasing the fight, pouring onto me, and just walking onto this left hook. And he just dropped it like a plum all night. He was even throwing backhand leads and smashing Burchell's chin back. Everything about it. It was a 10-round absolute masterclass. And never mind knockout of the year. You may not see a better single performance this year because a lot of people had him as the underdog. I think in Vegas, Valdez was the underdog because of his size.
He was, yeah.
You will not see a better single performance this year. For me, he won every round and looked sensational in every round as well.
Yeah, he was unbelievable, man. How much do you want to see
Tank?
The winner? You want to see Tank?
Tank. I want to see Oscar Valdez versus Tank. That, for me, defines who is the best super featherweight on the planet. I want to see it, man. I want to see that fight.
That is the bad boy. Listen, just hold fire. Make sure that fans can be allowed back in. That he deserves fans. I need to be there. That is an amazing fight. What an exciting fighter, man. Oscar Valdez, KO of the year. Xander was on the undercard, wasn't he, doing bits? He had a wide point. Listen, he was fighting a guy well beneath his levels. Xander Zayas, my one to watch this year, did the business, boxed his ears off, job done. Nice, what was it, a little six-rounder. Won it all. Well done, Xander. Moves on to the next stages of his career. I'd say you something, man. This Latino blood, they're all out there just killing everybody, aren't they? You know what I mean? You've got Teofimo, Honduran. You've got Puerto Ricans out there. You've got Mexicans out there. Jesus Christ, man. Don't be fucking about with these dudes. They are legit.
Tio was ringside as well, wasn't he?
Tio's ringside. Mate, Tio's at the opening of an envelope. He's everywhere, mate, right now. He is. Just in case you forgot, the guy's here. I'm here, guys. He's been on TV. Mate, he's been on TV more than me and you, and we're fucking TV presenters. He's on there every week.
What I love about Tio is as well, you know, you're talking about one of the best pound-for-pound fighters on the planet, the undisputed lightweight champion of the world, you know, fucking literally is the man right now still. And all you ever see him wear is Disney jumpers. Is he sponsored by Walt Disney?
Yeah, he's all over it, mate. Loves it. Loves it. The best thing about him, right, is that he doesn't live in Vegas. That's a 4 or 5 hour flight every week. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Yeah. Just need to go down there and remind them all, just in case they forgot. Nobody forgot. We saw you 7 days ago. No, I'm going back again. I love it. I love it, man. Yeah. That's what you've got to do, mate. It's all about, he gets the game. He completely gets the game. He knew full well that there would be eyes all over Valdez and Burchelt's fight. And he's there. He's there on the telly, chatting to Oscar Valdez, congratulating him. Speaking in, obviously, the native Spanish tongue as well. Mate, he's got it, man. He's got it. You know he's got it. We've got some great fights coming up this week, but just before we get stuck into to those, Dillian White off to Gibraltar. It was going to be on March the 6th. This has now been moved to March the 27th. And we're also hearing, this is a weird one, because we knew about it on last week's show, but we didn't want to say anything about it because it hadn't been officially announced. But Herring Frampton off this week. We were looking forward to it. And it's now, according to Bob Arum, who I had on the radio at the weekend, he's off to Dubai, this fight. I know that we're living in some crazy times with travel restrictions and various things for various fighters of how they can get in and out of countries, all these red zones and all this type of stuff. We know that we obviously struggle to get to America and all that. You've got to go to various places and what have you. But that one feels weird, man. The Herring Frampton situation just feels a little bit weird. Obviously, Carl said that he's injured. So we wish him all the best in that recovery. But to have a hand injury, to be able to recover, what, within a month, is it? To be able to get back to work. And then to have the fight up sticks from the UK and go somewhere else. It just feels really weird. The whole scenario feels really, really weird. Maybe it's because of fans. Maybe you can get fans in Dubai. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. There's a few more quid out there. Maybe there's an opportunity to make a few quid. I don't know.
Yeah, it just because it fell away so late as well. You know, you'd expect it all to be done. Now, there's a lot of talk, obviously, coming out of the US with their own kind of opinions on why the fight fell through regarding Top Rank refusing to pay for the fight when it was put on in the UK, when it was a Frank show and everything else. All seems very, very strange. And it's going to be interesting to see what broadcaster it lands on now, because obviously, Frank with his deal with BT, you would have expected it to just go on BT, but now with it becoming more of an NTK organized show out in Dubai, you know, will it still go on BT? Will it go out to the you know, highest broadcast bidder? Will it just end up on, you know, NTK's own streaming services? I don't know, man, but really it's a strange one. As you say, a hand injury would suggest a bit more of a delay. But then can he delay? You know, maybe there's a contractual issue with Herring saying, because Herring's talk about retirements as well. And maybe Kering said, listen, man, I can't delay another 6 months. I want this fight done.
And there's the Stevenson mandatory thing. Shaka Stevenson's mandatory as well.
He's that's what I mean. So maybe he's under pressure to do something else. So all I can hope for is, regardless of where it lands, I definitely still want to see it. And I just hope that we don't get a 90% Carl Frampton. I want 100% of Carl Frampton for his last ever fight. He's aiming to do something very, very special, become a three-weight world champion. And anything less than 100% Carl Frampton would be a travesty.
Hmm. Do you think we're going to start seeing more of this before all these lockdowns? I know that obviously UK are having a bit of an announcement this week, aren't they, regarding lockdowns and whatever. But do you think we're going to start seeing more fights going off to weird destinations? Because we're seeing it with football, aren't we? We're seeing like Europa League going off to random gaffs like Poland and Athens, because they've managed to get a bit of more of a grip on the coronavirus situation, so therefore they can allow people to come in and out of their country a little bit more freely. Obviously, we've got two fights there that we're talking about, one off to Dubai, one off to Gibraltar. Do you think we're going to start seeing a few more of these before we come out of lockdown?
I think so, yeah. I think so, because, as you say, there's the not only the site fee offering, but the fact that you can put some bums on seats. I think it makes a big difference, because, you know, you can up a fighter's pace, and especially in these times, the fighters are going to want as much money as possible. And if you're going to, what would you rather do? Fight in a TV studio in the UK for a world title for a set amount of money, or fight out in Gibraltar or in Dubai in front of some fans where there's some atmosphere for a little bit more money? I just think it's an absolute no-brainer, because there is no home advantage when there's no fans in the arena. So I think we are going to see a lot more of this. And I think the current global pandemic situation is probably why we haven't heard anything about Fury versus AJ, because I think that fight is 100%, you know, got its ears wide open in terms of what Boris Johnson's going to announce here in the UK later today. But also just in terms of travel, you know, you can't even leave the UK at the moment without having to quarantine when you come back, which is unfeasible for anybody that is willing to go to the Middle East to watch an AJ versus Fury type fight. So I think that it's literally like the goalposts are being moved week by week. And it wouldn't surprise me if the AJ Fury fight, those guys need to be in camp, because I think when it gets announced, it could get announced that it could be like a 5 or 6 week window before the fight actually happens.
Speaking of fans being in attendance, they're going to be in attendance for some of the fights this weekend. As I look down this list of fights, there's some funny ones on here, man. There's some funny ones just to make me giggle. But the one that I'm most interested in will probably take place whilst I'm watching my cornflakes. Not watching my cornflakes, eating my cornflakes nice and early in the morning for more our boy Joseph Parker. Back in action this weekend against Junior Farr. Obviously, this is taking place in New Zealand. Everything's back to normal in New Zealand. It's going to be a full arena. It's going to be fucking weird to watch sport with a full arena. You're going to think it's a tape from, 2 years ago, whatever it is. No, it's going to be live action. And for anybody that doesn't know too much about this, this is a massive, massive domestic rivalry in New Zealand. You've got Junior Farr, who works very, very closely with Eugene Berryman, who is the coach of the likes of Dan Hooker, Volkanovski, and what have you in the UFC. And then you've got, everybody knows Joe Parker, the former WBO heavyweight champion of the world and internet superstar that is since lockdown. Mate, this is a proper fight. It's a big, big fight. And it's a big fight when it comes to the rankings with the WBO as well. I'll be honest. I shouldn't have bias in the fight, but you know that I've absolutely fallen in love with Joseph Parker. So I'm on Joseph Parker's team. I'm all in. But Junior Farr's no fucking slight, man. This is a proper knock. And I think this might be the fight of the weekend.
Yeah, man. And people, listen, Joseph Parker's obviously a much bigger name in terms of boxing. He's been there. He's held a version of the world title belt. We've seen him on UK shows many times. And he obviously has got that reputation as being a top contender in the heavyweight division. But he's also been a pro a lot longer than Junior Farr. And even though Junior Farr's yet to fight outside of Australia or America, he has been making waves, and he has been slowly clocking them up. And there's a reason why they've got a hot rivalry. And that's the fact that, you know, they've boxed each other many times in the Australian National Championships, one of which was an Olympic qualifier. And Junior Farr has always beaten Joseph Parker, as far as I know. They've had a couple of fights and Junior Farr's won them both. So there's a little bit of extra needle in there, because there's a lot of history between both these guys. So I can't wait to watch it. It's going to be Saturday morning, isn't it? UK time.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch it. I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating. Yes, of course, you know, we're all on the junior, the Joseph Parker train, because we know him and we're a lot more friendly with him. But Junior Farr also knows that this is his breakthrough moment, man.
Yeah.
You beat Joseph Parker, you unlock a ton of big fights in the UK against fringe contenders. It could be the making of Junior Farr. So don't even think for a second this is going to be a whitewash in favour of Joseph Parker. This is a real fight, man. It's a real fight.
Yeah, man. And having fans in there with massive support for Junior Farr, massive support for Joseph Parker, it's just going to be great to watch. Like you said, Saturday morning, Coco Pops, get yourself stuck in. Canelo Yildirim. As a fight, I'm not arsed, really, because I know what's going to happen. I'm more arsed about Billy Joe Saunders being there in attendance and getting face-to-face with Canelo at the end of the fight, and hopefully that then gets announced for May the 8th. One thing that I just want to say on this, we've got to give him a compliment, because there's always been a shadow on this show with Canelo since the Clem Buterol situation, yeah? His performance against Callum Smith was fucking unbelievable. And his performances previous to Callum Smith have always been unbelievable. Yes, he's had some favourable judging in the past, and therefore, again, that might be a shadow over where he's at. But for me right now, he is the number one on the planet. He's the pound-for-pound best. He's just unbelievable. Everything that he does, back foot, front foot, offence, defence, he's got the lot. Absolutely got the lot. And I fully anticipate that he's going to take the mick out of Abner Yildirim at the weekend. If he goes beyond... If it gets into the second half of the fight, I'm gobsmacked. Absolutely gobsmacked. Anyway, that's by the by. For Canelo to take control of this situation, knowing full well it's a shit fight, and to bring it forward as quickly as he has, and to say, right, I've just fought in December, fuck it. I want to become the undisputed. I want to become the first Mexican undisputed super middleweight champion ever. Never had one. I want to be that guy. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to get this mandatory bullshit situation out of the way, because it is bullshit. He's supposed to be a franchise champion. I thought that got rid of mandatories, but it hasn't, obviously, because Maurizio needs a few quid. So that's happening this weekend, and he's brought it forward purposely as Canelo. He could have dragged this out. Many champions dragged this bollocks out. He hasn't. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's get it out of the way. I'm going to smash this dude. Get the other guy, get the WBO champion in the ring, ready to rock and roll, because we're going to make that for May. Then when I've smashed him, I'm going to go and take the IBF guy as well. So tell Caleb Plant to get ready. Tell him to get ready too. I love the attitude. We've got to commend that attitude. We've got to applaud that attitude. We want our champions to be fighting other champions. Politics has got in the way this weekend. It's not Canelo's fault, so I'm not going to slag him for that. I'm going to slag the politics of the sport. He's taken control of the politics of the sport, and he's making it work for himself. So fair play, Canelo. Well done, pal. Get this out of the way. Make it nice and sweet for us. Give us a viral moment, eh, so we can get it all hyped up. Let Billy Joe Saunders give you a little bit of shit on the microphone, and then away we go, mate. Roll on to May.
Is Billy Joe definitely going to be out there?
I'm led to believe he is, yeah.
Oh, good, good. Because he's got to be. You know, we've got to hype that fight. That's what this is. It's the first poster, isn't it, for that fight. We need them to go head-to-head in the ring. We need to build it forward. Listen, it's not worth banging a drum about Yildirim and whether he should be in there or not. I think we all realise he shouldn't be in there with Canelo.
It's coming off
Canelo,
a loss,
unfortunately,
mate.
Is playing that game. And, you know, could he have just told WBC to fuck off? Yes, he absolutely could have. But you know what? Maybe he wants to stay busy. Maybe he thinks that Yildirim is the perfect setup fight for the Billy Joe fight. And more than anything, Canelo's the biggest star in the sport. And if he wants to stay busy, then great. But the good thing is, as you say, there's a reason behind this fight's been made. It's been made because the Billy Joe fight is just around the corner. He just wants to tick a box with the WBC. Cool, man. Everything you've just said, spot on. Get in there, get rid of Yildirim inside six rounds, which I think he will do, and then we get Billy Joe in to go nose to nose. The issue is, how do we watch it in the UK? Because I heard it was going to be on Sky Sports box office, but I thought the zone was all...
Canelo. Canelo's on the zone.
Don't believe everything you see on BoxRec then.
Is that what
BoxRec have got it down as Sky Box Office?
Canelo's on Box Office this weekend against Yildirim.
That's what box Rex.
Mate, they ain't selling that. Ain't nobody buying that. It's on the zone for £1.99, pal. Right? That's where it will be for me anyway. I'll tell you what will make you laugh. I don't know if you saw this. It escaped me because we were all over various bits last week. It escaped me on Thursday, and I picked this up on Friday, so I apologise for posting this late on our social media. Anthony Durrell against Davies. Have you seen that? I put it on our social media.
That's this weekend as well, isn't it?
It's this weekend. This is the WBC Eliminator. So this is the WBC mandatory this weekend for Canelo. He's taking on Yildirim. They're having an Eliminator to become the number one contender. Anthony Durrell is fighting a guy that's never fought at super middleweight before in Davies, right? Davies has been a journeyman at 160. And now he's getting in an Eliminator at 168 against the guy that got knocked out in his last fight. WBC, leave it. I'm not going to bring the energy down. We've had good energy on the show, right? I'm not going to bring the energy down, but that's happening this weekend as well. Keep an eye out for it. On the undercard of the Canelo fight, by the way, Martinez and Arroyo is a decent fight. It's a flyweight fight. Again, WBC, if I'm not mistaken.
No one cares about flyweights. No one cares about flyweights. The one to look out for is Diego Pacheco on the undercard, the super middleweight from LA. I think he's 18 years of age. He's 10-0. He's absolutely mustard. Keep an eye out for him. Don't watch. Nobody cares about flyweights. Come on.
That's going to be the hook for this week's show. Nobody cares about flyweights, Nick Pete. There you go. Coming back to British soil, I'm just looking at what is available for us this week on Frank's card. Top of the bill, I suppose. It would have been brilliant to have Herring and Frampton with this as a co-main. Obviously, the Herring-Frampton fight is off. So, Kakachi against Woodstock for the British super feather. It's a good fight, man. It was a good fight when it was made. I was excited about it being the co-main to Herring-Frampton. It's a shame that I look down the card and I think to myself, there's some talent on the card, but is the fights there? The fight is definitely the main event. The fight is the main event. The main event will be good. So make sure you check that out.
Tommy TNT Fury, come on, kid. How can you not get excited about the big man being
I'm
back?
Always excited about Tommy, but
Tommy
come on.
TNT Fury. Don't get me wrong, it'd help if he wasn't fighting TBA at this stage in the fight week preparations. But yeah, let's not get negative now. Let's not end on a sour note.
No, I'm not doing.
Let's stay positive. That British title fight will be fun.
Yes, it will be, indeed. Listen, we're in a good place, man. We had a wonderful weekend. Boxing was booming at the weekend. Woo-hoo! And I think we're going to get some good stuff this weekend. I think, like I said, Joseph Parker,
there's a lot of knockovers this weekend, but yeah, it's fun.
But listen,
Canelo's back. Come on.
Canelo's back. Joseph Parker and Junior Farr, two heavyweights, are going to go at it. I think
that's the fight.
That's
the fight of the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. There you go. Thank you very much for listening to us. It's been an absolute pleasure being in your company once again. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for, and fightdisciples.com is our website where everything else is there. And if you like a bit of MMA, please go and listen to episode 472 of the Fight Disciples podcast, because basically it's half an hour of Nick Pete telling us that he told us so about Tom Aspinall. Who'd have thought it, eh? Who'd have thought it? Nick Pete celebrating his victories more than anybody else, yeah?
I had a good week. I told you Avanesian was going to smash him to bits. I told you Tom Aspinall was going to arrive with aplomb. Honestly, you're welcome.
Stick with Nick. Look at him. Stick with Nick Pete. You'll wear diamonds. That's where you're at. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.